Our next case for argument this morning is Williams against the Interpublic Severance Pay Plan. Ms. Borowski.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Violet Borowski, Counsel for the Appellant. Williams is entitled to severance benefits under the severance plan, as the position Williams was offered by Greenhouse was not comparable to the position that he held at Campbell Mitham. Common sense dictates this conclusion, as the term comparable is not ambiguous, and therefore it leaves no room for interpretive discretion on the part of the plan administrator. According to the plain dictionary definition of comparable, it means to be conforming in every respect. Therefore, appellee's determination that it only had to consider certain aspects of the comparison is unreasonable. Further, the leading precedent in this circuit, Dobberdin v. HCR Manor Care Incorporated and Bowles v. Quantum Chemical Company, require a more detailed analysis in determining comparability, and the district court failed to even mention these controlling cases. In these cases, the court performed an in-depth examination as to the duties, authority, responsibilities, and status of the positions. Here, Interpublic only performed a shallow comparison of the positions. It is evident that when you compare the benefits, the position offered at Greenhouse was grossly inferior. When the duties and responsibilities are compared, it is evident that the position at Greenhouse would substantially diminish his duties and responsibilities. And when looking at career advancement, the position at Greenhouse would have diminished his ability to advance his career. Indeed, it was one of Interpublic's own factors in determining comparability in its initial denial to look at the benefits. It stated that only three factors were relevant: benefits, salary, and title. Once Williams proved that the benefits were grossly inferior, Interpublic completely shifted its rationale in its final denial and stated that benefits were no longer relevant. Such shifting rationale is arbitrary and capricious decision-making. When looking at the duties and responsibilities that he held at Campbell Mitham versus those that he held at Greenhouse, it's evident that the position that he would have, the position at Greenhouse would have been substantially inferior. He would no longer have significant supervisory and administrative responsibilities. He would no longer be department manager at Greenhouse. He would have just been an account manager. The size of the accounts managed at Greenhouse would have been much smaller than those that he would have managed those that he did manage at Campbell. Moreover, he would no longer have the opportunity to manage an account on a fully integrated basis, because Campbell Mitham was a small local agency that could not handle the types of accounts that Campbell had. Also, at Campbell, he oversaw the relationship with most of Campbell's clients, which would not be part of his responsibilities at Interpublic. Moreover, less people would be reporting to him, and he would have no senior-level people reporting to him. Further, when looking at career advancement, it is evident that his career advancement would be diminished had he taken the job at Greenhouse. Had he taken this job, it would have set his career back by 10 years. He would suffer a loss of prestige and reputation associated with being with a national agency if he had taken a job with a small local company.
He had been here since 1981. How old was he?
I would say he said he worked for about 25 years in the advertising.
81 he started. So how old is he when he wants to get the severance package?
I would say in his late 40s.
Late 40s. So he started when he was a
teenager? He started in 81, you said?
Yeah, well, no, I didn't say it. I said what the party presented to us, that he started at the agency in 1981.
Well, it's my understanding
that... So he's been there 25 years or so.
It was my understanding that he stated that he went to Loyola and then no further education, so he there's not a detailed discussion of what jobs he had taken, but if his first job was at Campbell, then he could be just about 50 years old.
Okay, so just to understand it, and I'm not sure I do, but he wants to get severance from Mitchell. Is it Mitchell?
From Green. From Campbell, right.
Campbell. And also then accept this job at a couple thousand dollars more a year pay and stay with the other.
No, he actually denied the offer from Greenhouse. He didn't want to take that position. The reason that he didn't take that position is because he felt as though it was inferior. And the plan states that if you deny a position and you're offered a comparable position at the same or higher salary, then you're not entitled to severance. And William's argument is that he was not offered a position that was comparable.
But it's only the money is more, but it's just that you're saying his career opportunities are lessened by.
He was only offered $2,000 more, and that's one part of the analysis, the salary. The relevant part of the analysis that's issue here is whether or not the positions were comparable. And when looking at that, it's evident that they're not comparable because his career would be diminished. That is one point. But also the duties and responsibilities he would have had were not comparable, and the benefits were grossly inferior. And Greenhouse states that benefits are one of the factors to be considered when determining comparability. And then when Williams proves that the benefits were grossly inferior, he didn't have disability insurance coverage. He wasn't offered severance. His life insurance coverage was substantially less at Greenhouse, and his monthly costs for health care would have been substantially greater. And those are just a few elements of the benefits comparison that Williams pointed out when requesting his severance. And instead of addressing that, Greenhouse simply ignores that comparison.
I don't understand the argument about benefits. The severance plan talks about greater salary, not greater salary plus fringe benefits. Was there an argument made to the plan in this request for benefits about the meaning of the word salary in the plan?
There really wasn't an argument made with regard to the meaning of salary. It was always that benefits should...
I could sort of understand an argument that anything that is easily monetizable, like, say, the parking allowance, should be treated as part of salary. But if that argument was never made to the plan, it's difficult to see how you could complain to the district judge.
The argument was made to the plan that benefits were relevant.
Right, but that's a loser, because the plan says salary. The question I'm asking is, was there any argument about what is the meaning of salary? Is it only something denominated salary, or is it all cash paid to the employee so that the parking allowance is part of salary? But you say that was never made to the plan.
It was made to the plan, but what is more significant is that I don't feel it.
Now I'm totally lost. First you said it wasn't made to the plan. Now you say it was made to the plan.
It wasn't the main argument. The main argument is that...
I don't care what the main argument was, right? Don't characterize. I'm asking whether this argument was made to the plan. Was there an argument to the plan that the meaning of the word salary in the plan includes all cash paid to the employee?
I believe that it was. But I would like to go back to, Your Honor, to the point that was made previously, which is that... It can't be said that...
Tell me where it was or how we would find in the record that it was made.
If you go back to the Williams appeal letter on D0014 and 0017.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't specifically state that. It states that The benefits comparison chart offers further evidence of the inferiority of the job, and it goes into the discussion of the benefits.
All right, so the bottom line is it was not made to the plan.
But the point being that in the initial denial letter, Interpublic stated that benefits along with salary and title were all relevant considerations. And in that way, benefits are part of the analysis of comparability. In fact, even the district court states that it is a relevant factor with regard to comparability. If there are no further questions, I see that my time has expired.
Thank you, Ms. Borowski. Mr. Hayes.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. The key provision in the severance plan is if the employee loses his or position to a business sale, the employee is not entitled to severance if the loss of the job was if the employee received an offer of a comparable position at a successor employer at the same or higher salary. Now, when the appellant argues that the word comparable is crystal clear and we should look at the online dictionary they recite,
we should wait here for the Supreme Court's decision in MetLife against Glenn.
I don't believe so. No, the certiorari issue granted there appears to be what we would do if we find that there is a conflict of interest as a result of a plan being unfunded, which is a bit different than the question that the appellant argues here, which is that we should find a conflict of interest because the plan is unfunded. I add to that that the district court here did make a finding that there was no conflict of interest.
How are these different questions, given that this is an unfunded plan?
The question of whether the fact that it's unfunded, whether that creates a conflict, is a separate question, I believe, and the question of if you find that's the case, what do we do with that? Do we eliminate the arbitrary and capricious standard entirely? Do we use a sliding scale? I think those are two different questions. While the appellant relies upon this online dictionary definition of the word comparable, it was the province of the plan administrator to interpret the words of the plan. The online dictionary that the appellant cite, by the way, has more than one definition of the word comparable. They didn't cite the first one. The first one in that same online dictionary is able to be compared or worthy of comparison, something that requires some interpretation from the plan administrator. One could look to other dictionaries and find out.
I trust that that's not the definition of comparable you want, because in that event, the job of President of the United States and janitor are comparable. I can compare exactly the differences between those jobs.
It's not that that first definition is the one, and I note that that's not the definition that the plan administrator here cited.
Exactly. But so why in the world would you bring it up?
Because I'm pointing out that the word comparable isn't simply something that one can immediately glean the full meaning of by citing an online dictionary. Rather, it was the province of the plan administrator to give us information as to what that means. And the plan administrator gave us an interpretation that's much more precise, I submit to you, than the one in the online dictionary, which is that it talked about there being a compensation component and a functional component. They said the compensation component is same or higher salary. And they said salary means base rate of pay, which is entirely consistent with the normal use of the word salary. Indeed, one could submit that a wise drafter of a plan would use the word salary because it's more precise and doesn't require trying to compare apples and orange sets of benefits. The plan administrator looked at the functional component and says we're going to look at whether the job area is functionally the same. So, for example, we're not comparing the president to a janitor, but rather we're saying this guy went from an account management position to another account management position. And so let's look at similar levels of seniority. So we're talking about somebody going from a senior vice president position to another senior vice president position, rather than being knocked down to, say, manager. That is an entirely reasonable definition of the words in the plan, such as salary and comparable, as they are typically used in the English language. And under that interpretation, it was a very reasonable conclusion, and indeed an inescapable conclusion, that Mr. Williams was not entitled to severance pay. The salary, meaning the base rate of pay, was $169,000 at Greenhouse, clearly offered higher than the $167,000 salary that Mr. Williams had been earning at Campbell Methuen. The functional area, account management, was similar, if not identical, to what he had at Campbell Methuen. And the level of seniority, senior vice president, was similar, if not identical. Under this interpretation, the plan administrator reasonably refused to dive into a line-by-line comparison of the expected duties that Mr. Williams might have at Campbell at Greenhouse compared to the ones he had at Campbell Methuen, such as the exact number of employees that he supervised at Campbell Methuen compared to the exact number of employees that he would supervise at Greenhouse. In either case, he was going to be supervising employees. In contrast, I note that the severance plans at issue in the Daverton and Bowles cases, which the appellants rely on heavily in their brief, both specifically list diminution of duties as a sufficient basis to trigger severance. There is no such provision in the severance plan here. So when counsel argued that in those cases the court looked at a list such as was there diminution of title, duties, authority, etc., she's right, they did in those cases, because the plans in those cases specifically said they were supposed to. It listed duties as on itself as a sufficient basis to trigger a severance obligation. There's no such language like that in the Interpublic plan. The district court, in granting summary judgment to the defendants, recognized the reasonableness of the plan administrator's interpretation of the plan in his finding that Williams was not entitled to severance. It was similarly entitled, reasonable for the plan administrator to interpret the words a successor employer as meaning any successor employer and not meaning only a comparable successor employer. That is certainly a reasonable interpretation and indeed the better one linguistically. With that reading of the word a successor employer, it was appropriate for the plan administrator to refuse to try to engage in a comparison between whether Greenhouse was a better company or a worse company than Campbell Methuen. They were a successor employer. The district court correctly found that the plan vests discretion with the plan administrator and the authority to interpret the plan, and it was no manifest error for the district court to find that the plan administrator had no conflict of interest. It was not a manifest error for the district court to conclude that there was no conflict of interest because it was an unfunded plan. It was not a manifest error for the district court to conclude that there was insufficient evidence of a scheme to avoid paying severance. The only competent evidence in the record is that Campbell Methuen was trying to sell rather than close its Chicago facility.
What is the plan's understanding of the meaning of the word salary?
Base rate of pay, meaning literally one gets a paycheck every week that's under the Fair Labor Standards Act, for example. The word salary is used. You're going to get, that's your paycheck every week. It won't be increased or decreased based on how many hours you work, separate and apart from your medical insurance and whether you elect this or that and how much.
Something like a parking allowance part of salary. It's not increased or decreased based on how much you work and so on.
But it's in the separate line category of benefits, though.
What difference does that make? If they say we have two components and we call them salary A and Fred, right?
Yeah.
And both salary prime and Fred are paid every month. The fact that they call one of them Fred doesn't make it less salary, does it?
Well, in this case, it may. I mean, take the example of a parking.
No, I'm not interested in this case. That's why I'm asking,
okay,
what's the plan's understanding of the meaning of the word salary?
The plan's understanding is only the base rate of pay that is a separate and apart from anything that is relayed as a benefit, such as parking. And if I may address the specific example of parking, Greenhouse's head office was going to be at 3-something West Erie Street. Parking there may be less expensive than downtown Chicago where Campbell Methuen was.
That may or may not be true.
And there may or may not be a tax benefit.
That's why I'm not interested in the application. The plan does the application. We worry about questions of meaning. Let me put it a different way. What you've now suggested is that salary means everything that is taxable. But, of course, one of the things an employer can do is enter into a salary reduction agreement with an employee, part of the 401k process. Let's suppose the acquiring firm offers to enter into a salary reduction agreement so that money is squirreled away into a retirement plan at a higher rate, and the taxable salary as a result of that is lower. In the plan's view, would that mean that the employee is then entitled to this parachute payment?
But let me
because
clarify.
Now the salary has been reduced?
Let me clarify my earlier answer. I do not mean to be saying that the plan defines salary as a taxable amount. What I mean to be saying is that the salary is defined by the plan as base rate of pay only. And that's reported for Mark Williams on the box called salary is $167,000. And the offer letter from Greenhouse listed under the category called salary of $169,000. I recognize economically that one could argue what's the difference, but there is a common usage in the business community of the term salary to have a pretty particular meaning that's used often. People say, what salary are you offering me? They say $169,000, but then look at all of our benefits, parking, medical, insurance, et cetera. This is common usage in the business community, so it's reasonable for the plan administrator to interpret it the same way when it's looking at how the term is used in its severance plan. Similarly, it was not a manifest error for the district court to conclude, as it did, that there was no evidence of a scheme to avoid paying severance. It was entirely consistent for the plan to say at the outset that the benefits were comparable, but also to point out that in studying the matter that the issue isn't really relevant. Finally, it was not a manifest error for the district court to conclude, as it did, that notwithstanding procedural irregularities, the plan administrator did give ultimate full and fair review to Mr. Williams' claim for benefits. In sum, the plan gave the plan administrator the right to interpret the plan.
Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you for your attention.
The case is taken under advisement.